The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Everybody, welcome to Life Hacker for the week of May 7th. With me, commonly is the case. I don't know, as always, because I mean, actually, you guys.
You're
are
the only
here.
One who is
with me as always.
Been here. Welcome back.
Not been here. Yeah,
is Witz and Gordon, Adam Dachis, joining us, Alan Henry via Skype,
what's
and
up?
I'm Adam Pash. We've got news. We've got questions. We've got downloads. Another normal show. Better than normal, probably.
Awesome show.
So, yeah. Let's get started with the news. All right, so one of the big pieces of news last week, Google doesn't release phones yet.
Samsung
released the Galaxy S3. Which there's a lot of hubbub
really
surrounding.
It's just another Android phone, but it's the most powerful Android phone yet phone.
Alan, why don't you give us some context for why we should even care that there is another Android phone being released?
So, yeah, the Samsung Galaxy line is probably the most popular Android phone in the world, right? So I think that when the S2 came out, it got like well over a million pre-orders in South Korea alone or something like that. So the Galaxy S3, Samsung announced it at a big kind of big press event, and it's another ice cream sandwich phone, which is great because most Android phones still don't have ice cream sandwich. It's got a 4.8-inch Super AMOLED display. It's like they tout it as full HD. It's a 720p display, Wi-Fi, 8-megapixel camera, all micro SD, all that good stuff. But it's huge. It has a couple of really kind of quirky features, like this one where it'll keep the screen bright as long as you're looking directly at it. Like the front side camera watches your eyes to find out whether or not you're looking at the phone.
That is cool.
So this is Samsung's first ice cream sandwich phone. This is the first time we're seeing ice cream sandwich TouchWiz, right?
Yes. Okay. Samsung made the Galaxy Nexus, the kind of official Google phone.
This is ice cream sandwich TouchWiz.
Sorry, TouchWiz is Samsung's custom UI that they put on their phones. Like HTC has their HTC Sense, yeah. Motorola has Moto Blur. TouchWiz
right.
is Samsung.
TouchWiz. They didn't name that well.
Samsung's rolled a bunch of new features into TouchWiz to try and make it more palatable to people, because by and large most Android users look at the interface that a manufacturer puts on the phone and says, I don't need this. I want an Android.
Right.
And they're trying to add some features to TouchWiz that makes people a little bit happier about having it when they open their phone.
Which is what the opposite of what HTC did with Ice Cream Sandwich, right? Is they toned down Sense a lot to be like, look, it's mostly stock Android, but with a few things that make it better, which is really what I want from Sense, because Sense does have a lot of things that copy and paste is way better on Sense than it is on Android.
And they had great, like, widget, all of the...
Yeah, and they had great widgets and stuff, but they had just, over time, had gone a little overboard with Sense. So.
I have to say, though, I have an Android tablet, it's a Samsung, and I have TouchWiz for whatever came before Ice Cream Sandwich, I don't even remember anymore.
Gingerbread.
And it's fine, it's not, I haven't found that it's, like, terribly different from...
It's the only one I've never
the
used.
...the stock.
So can I get a perspective check? Ice Cream Sandwich, Ice Cream Sandwich was announced when?
Last fall.
Wait, when you say last fall, you mean?
I mean, like, the fall, but, like, I mean, like, September.
Really?
Of 2011?
Yep, I believe so.
Yeah, it was September 2011.
It's that, and which is why this is so ridiculous, that this was announced and, like, released months ago, last fall, and the vast majority of people still do not have it. My phone is by no means an old phone, and I still do not have ice cream sandwich.
What is an old phone? Because now you're an iPhone user. And everyone iPhone at this user, table but... is an iPhone user, perhaps because of these issues.
When ice cream sandwich came out, I was like, this could be like what makes me love Android again. This could fix all the things that I love about the iPhone and hate about Android. Guess what? Never got a chance to find out because I waited 7 months and I still didn't get ice cream sandwich. Not even in the form of like a custom ROM.
Yeah.
So that's like, you know, I got tired of waiting. Sorry, Android.
Well, before we move on from this, just one quick thing. With there was a story this weekend, or maybe it was the week before, or last weekend, I should say, not this weekend. That hasn't happened yet. about Steve Wozniak saying that Windows Phone 7 was much more intuitive and beautiful than Android, and really should be the winner in the whole war. But as we've said, you know, I mean, Windows Phone is coming a little too late. But Whitson, you spent a lot of time with it.
I gotta say, I love Windows Phone, you guys. If it weren't for the only reason I got the iPhone instead of, like, I would have considered a Windows Phone if it had good apps for, like, Gmail and Google Voice, if it had better Google integrations. Like, the reason I was finally able to switch to iPhone is because we have Sparrow, we have a good Google Voice app that you can get in the store now, or a good Google Voice jailbreak app.
Yeah.
So I can actually use all those things on the phone. Windows Phone, the interface is so beautiful and so consistent, and I really, really like it. And the phone powers on, like, instantaneously. You have to sit there waiting for, like, a minute for it to load, and it's always fast because the interface is just so simple.
And
I really, really like it. And the hardware looks good, too. I really like it. It just, like, wasn't... If the app economy or whatever were better for it, it would be a great contender.
Yep.
I think.
Developers,
completely agree.
Get to work.
You know, it's hard because you're not all, you know, it's very much a which came first, chicken or the egg situation, because developers aren't developing for it because no one uses it, but no one's using it because the app store isn't there.
I think it's a long game. At Microsoft, they've done a good job, and I think that more and more people will use it. I think it's got a promising future. It's just like it's hard right now to care that
and
much.
I think it does fill a very specific niche that maybe I think is bigger than it is. But for like people who want a smartphone, want to be able to browse the web and get email on their phone, want to upgrade from a dumb phone, but don't necessarily care about downloading tons of different apps and playing Angry Birds and doing all these other things on their phone, Windows Phone is perfect for those people because it's super easy to use.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Windows.
Yes. And by the way, Galaxy S3, if you're interested in more news about it, Gizmodo's got a couple of good posts on them. They've got a comparison between it and the iPhone, which is, you know, it's really just a feature comparison. I don't know how those things are. But speaking of Windows, Whitson over here spent a week with Internet Explorer, which is something that I
no one has ever
I haven't done.
Done
for a very long time. I have spent considerable amounts of time with Internet Explorer
in the 90s.
No. Well, yes, but when I wrote the last edition of the Lifehacker book, I spent a lot of time working in Internet Explorer. I still really like it. Just it's not there for me. It's just And you spent...
So
here, what did you
feel? The idea was that everyone loves to just hate on Internet Explorer and talk trash about it all the time. And I always kind of watch these people trolling Internet Explorer and wonder, like, have you actually used it, like, since the 90s when it was actually really bad? Have you actually used Internet Explorer? And do you know... You know, because people say that it crashes all the time and all this stuff. So I went out to use it for a week to see which of these claims were actually true. First of all, it doesn't crash all the time. It was actually one of the most stable browsers I've ever used, at least... Part of that might be because of the integration with the operating system, but I have Firefox crash all the time. I don't know.
You're using Internet Explorer 9.
And it never Internet Explorer 9.
Problems.
And in Internet Explorer, it never got bogged down by a lot of tabs, at least for me.
That sounds nice.
Yeah. So there were some things about it that were very nice. It has really good Windows integration. Those pinned sites are very cool. So, like, if you listen to Slacker Radio, you can pin Slacker Radio to your taskbar and actually get, like, media controls when you hover over the icon. Things like that are really cool. But for the rest of it, the power user features that we have come to love so much in Chrome and Firefox, like keyword searches.
I
can search Lifehacker just
that.
By typing LH and then search terms that will search Lifehacker.
Yeah.
Or I can set up to search, you know, all my favorite tech sites, Lifehacker, Gizmodo, How-To Geek, whatever.
You know, actually, what you should have tried doing is you should have gone all in at the same time with DuckDuckGo, which
has those, and so like
those Bing.
One person
searches.
Said that in the comments is that can kind of replace it. You can't create custom ones, but that could, you know, if you're using Internet Explorer, that could somewhat replace that feature.
For anyone who doesn't know, DuckDuckGo is an alternative search engine that has something like keyword searches built into the search engine. So like you can type exclamation point, bang, life hacker, and then a search, and it will search like life hacker the site.
Right. And but it only works with certain sites that they set it up for.
They have a ton of them. They support a lot. So it would be a potential workaround
for a lot of people.
And actually, if you're stuck using Internet Explorer at work, for example, it might be something you're really interested in trying out.
I also didn't, I missed pinned tabs because I keep like both my Gmail accounts, Google Calendar, Google Reader. I have like 10 pinned tabs, and that saves you a lot of space. And also, the extensions library in Internet Explorer is just absolutely abysmal. There's just like nothing.
So at least they have some, though. I mean, like at least some.
You,
people
you say that, but go look because they, well, no, they but really at least don't a, have at least some.
Extensions are a possibility.
Yes,
but basically, Internet Explorer, Windows is, or Microsoft has made Internet Explorer for Windows. It's more like Safari is on the on
the
OS
integration
now, which
is great.
Like,
it's not quite as much of a power user browser, but Internet Explorer has improved to the point where it's not something that I think you need to really pry from the cold, dead hands of your parents and grandparents that are using it.
Why are they dead when they're using it?
I don't know. But you know what? Because in the old days, you would try to get them to change their browser, less tech-savvy people, and they'd be like, no, don't change anything, Yeah. You can pry it from my cold, dead hands. So we're at that point where you don't need to worry about that. It's fine. If people don't know what they're missing, then they won't know what they're missing.
Though I did really like last year, we, I think at Thanksgiving, we did a post about
how to secretly change your parents' or grandparents' browser, which was pretty, make Firefox look like Internet Explorer and change the icon, which was all fun and humorous.
I actually really liked that idea.
But the point is that's not really necessary anymore because Internet Explorer is good enough now.
But would you use it as like a secondary browser, or would you still stick with something like Opera?
So,
because it is better for battery.
It does.
Life,
it does give you better battery. Supposedly, some site did some experiments, and it was better for battery life than all of the other browsers. So maybe that's like, yeah, if I'm out on the go and I'm like kind of at the edge of my battery life, I could use Internet Explorer easily. The other thing is, I did have just a few tiny rendering errors on certain sites, or like HTML5 errors where a certain web app wouldn't be supported. It's much rarer than I think it used to be for maybe Firefox users.
Yeah.
But there's still a little bit of it's still a little bit harder to develop for Internet Explorer, so you might run into those issues. But it's rare, and if you don't run into those issues, it's no big deal.
One more last brief bit of conversation in the news section. We brought Alan in over Skype. We bring our guests in over Skype. And we discovered that Skype has the scientifically most perfect incoming call ringtone. And you may not believe it. I don't know if you use Skype. If you have, you probably do
know what
I'm talking
about
and you believe it. But I just looked up Skype incoming call ringtone. There's a 15-minute loop of it on YouTube. And it's just the Skype ringtone looping for 15 minutes, which is amazing. And the commenter says, or the uploader calls it, quite possibly the best ringtone in existence. So we're not alone. This is just a fact. It's a fact of life. The Skype incoming call ringtone is incredible.
I kind
of
want to make it my ringtone on my phone.
I do too, but I really like my ringtone.
You do have a good ringtone.
So
for the rest of this podcast, we're actually just going to play this song for 15 minutes, and that will be all for us at Lifehack.
Who's ready to answer some questions? Okay, our first question comes from a caller.
Hi, this is Karan Deshmukh from Amravati, India. My query is regarding Google Play's payment processor, which happens to be Google Wallet. I just bought an HTC Sensation, and I've been trying to buy apps from the Play Store ever since, but each and every time my payment gets declined. I wrote about this to Google Play support and Google Wallet support, but they replied back with an email stating that my bank is not letting the payment go through and that I should get in touch with my bank. So I got in touch with my bank and they said that there's nothing wrong on their side. Also, additionally, my Visa debit card, which was recently renewed by the way, works everywhere else, just not on Google Play. Am I supposed to open an account in another bank just to buy apps? Even if I did, is there any guarantee that the new card will work? Is this problem fixable? Thank you in advance. Love the show, guys.
Okay. That is intense.
That is, yeah. I'm not. I think I might be missing one of the details. So he's trying to buy apps on the Play Store using Google Wallet?
Yes.
Yeah, but it works everywhere. Apparently the debit card he has set up with it, it works everywhere else, but it doesn't work with Google's own service.
Alan, what do you think?
So, yeah, the Google Play uses Google Wallet to buy everything. And yeah, Google Wallet only supports Visa, MasterCard, Discover, American Express, the kind of big primary card companies. Whether or not the issue's really with his bank or with Google is kind of up in the air. I mean, he's going to have to try and get through whatever layers of customer service he can to get that particular issue fixed. But if he really wants to buy something from Google Play, he can always buy like prepaid Visa gift cards or prepaid debit cards. Like I know American Express and Visa both have those little cards that you can load up with $20 or something and give to somebody, and you can use them just like cash. Alternatively, you know, like he said, you can get another card. There's no guarantee it will work, but yeah. But it sounds like this is a very specific problem with his one bank and with Google. Alternatively, he could try and call Google. I read recently Google actually has a phone
Play
number.
Actually does have a support line, but he said he called them.
Oh, he called it.
He called both Google Play and his credit card company, and they both blamed the other, which was the
worst.
Emailed Google Play. At any rate, Google Play does have a support line, which is shocking for Google because they never have
that line.
Support.
Yeah, exactly.
We will make it magically appear.
He could try calling this number, but I don't know if he's going to get much else out of that than he did the email. The prepaid card sounds like a great workaround, though.
Yeah.
If that does work, it's a possibility.
If not, he can spend it on something else. So it's not like there's any harm done there.
I'm not sure what he's buying in the Play Store anyway, since all the apps are free.
Oh, come on.
I'm just kidding. It
this guy.
That was one of the
things
bugged me about Android, is that all the apps were free and ad-supported, and they would just never come out with pay apps because that one study that said Android users don't pay for apps.
All the apps I've ever gotten have been. I was really disappointed when I got my Android tablet because I paid for all these apps. I'm like, I thought that I was getting a free ride here. And it did not happen.
All right.
I mean, I'm assuming he's buying apps, because if he's not, then, you know, if he's not buying apps, then okay, it makes sense. But if he's buying apps, there are other app stores he could try.
True.
So
that's
he doesn't have
true.
To just
oh,
use
yeah.
Google
good point.
Play.
Yeah, he could try out Amazon or.
Yep.
That's a good idea.
Really good idea. If you can't get it working, use the Amazon app store because they have a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm. And if that still doesn't work, there are gift cards. So, I mean, Amazon, you could just get Amazon credit too.
Right.
Yeah. Although you'd think that if he can do that, he
but
his, probably.
But Amazon's payment will go through Amazon rather
yeah,
than Google,
yeah,
so it'll work fine with.
Never mind what I said.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
All right. So reader Hot 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 from Florida writes, I can get fired if I have my cell phone on at my part-time job. I take such short breaks, I'd rather leave my phone on and in the car than turn it on and off whenever I leave/come back into the building. Sounds like she needs
a Windows phone.
Because
it turns on and off really quickly.
I'm fully aware that leaving even non-melty things in a hot car with black interior in Florida is a bad idea. Is there any way I can keep things cool in my car for an extended amount of time? First of all, just to reinforce what you said about keeping your phone in your hot car, not only is it bad for it, just like, I mean, it literally could melt potentially, but it will kill your battery life and like the longevity of your battery, not just for like an individual charge, but for like the lifespan of the battery. It will hold charges for less and less time when you keep it stored in an extremely hot place. Witten has written a long, I think, Ask Lifehacker post about this.
About battery life.
But in general, just to reinforce what you said, it's not going to be good for your phone. And in fact, that alone might be reason enough just not to do it.
Yeah, I would say that there are things you can do to this. You know, you can leave windows open just a crack and it will dramatically decrease the temperature of the car. But in Florida with a car with a black interior, it's still going to be too hot to leave your phone in there all day. I would just not recommend doing it at all.
And with the humidity, that's even worse.
Keep it off and in your pocket.
Yeah. I mean, there are other things you could do. You could put, like, you know, the reflecting window visor things up. You could do all of those things.
Well, I still think it's
probably not.
Are there parts of the car that might stay a little bit cooler, though?
I mean, yeah, but not really. I mean, not, like, if you're, let's say you take a break every, like, 2 hours even. I don't think your car's going to get hot
in 2 hours. I think even
like,
the cool parts of the car are going to be
too
hot.
Even if it's
in
like the glove compartment
that
and it stays cool. If you wanted, maybe you could get one of those you could get like one of those cooler ice things, you know, those plastic things you put in a cooler.
Uh-huh.
Put that in your glove box. Put your phone in there. You could go for that. I think you could rock that and it could probably work.
My sister's car actually has a compartment with ice that you can cool in the glove box.
What about
Michigan
the,
people, right?
What about the part?
Yeah, we like things cold.
You know where the spare tire is, though?
Yeah.
In the trunk, under the thing? It always seems cool to me.
I mean, I hear what you're saying. I think maybe that could work out. At the same time, part of the issue is she or he, I'm not sure, doesn't want to take the time to wait for the phone to turn on and off.
Oh,
yeah.
So it's like you pop the trunk, you open that up, you move the tire, and then you're... So, whatever. I'd recommend probably... The other thing you could do is keep your phone on, but put it in airplane mode when you're in the office that you don't have to...
That's a good solution.
And if you're really wanting to go crazy with it, you could do something where when it's connected to your Wi-Fi, you could use something like Tasker that would put it into airplane mode when it's connected to your Wi-Fi, or something that automates the process. So you have some options, but yeah, hopefully just don't keep in your car. It's probably going to do more damage than it's really worth.
Yeah.
So there you go. Our next question comes from a caller.
Hi, Lifehacker. I love your show. I was wondering what happens when you delete a file off of your computer. Thanks. That's it. Bye.
Okay, cool. We can answer this question. Does anyone want to take the lead on that?
Alan, why don't you,
Sure. So, when you delete a file, like you move it to the recycle bin or the trash can or something, all that really does is tell your operating system that the space that the file occupies on your computer is available to write new information to it. It doesn't actually go and like, scrub out the file or anything like that. That doesn't happen, at all, really. I was going to say until you empty the recycle bin, but even then, it doesn't actually actively delete the file. All it does is just free up that space for the operating system to use. So if you're worried about getting it back, you always can. It's just a matter of time between you actually deleting the file and trying to retrieve it.
Because it will be gone when the hard drive rewrites over that space.
I mean, mostly that's true. There are like forensics for data recovery that can actually do some pretty impressive things. But basically, the idea is your hard drive is just like full of ones and zeros. And when you delete a file, it's just saying this section of ones and zeros can be overwritten by other ones and zeros. And you can do things to securely delete files so that it actually does.
Zeros out.
So there are things that the OS X has secure delete built into it. I don't...
I think Windows does.
But there are things, there are apps, there are programs you can download that will do it. And some of them, I don't remember what it's called, but there was one on Windows from a while back that basically would do like some sort of crazy, like you would secure delete something and it would overwrite it with like some sort of algorithm like 8 times and then delete that and then overwrite it and then delete that and just do
so
like some things to like work hard to make sure that it's wiped. I don't know enough about the like technicalities involved in like the recovery when it's been overwritten. Mm-hmm. But for just basic deletion that's not secure deletion, you can actually a lot of times, obviously that's why it's so easy once you've put something in the trash, you can recover it. But even after you've deleted something from the trash, you can then often
use
apps like PhotoRec, it's like photo recovery, something like that was a really good one. There are several applications for both Mac and Windows that we can put in the show notes that are really good at recovering because they're still mostly there.
Cool. But there are not always guarantees. You don't want to rely on that too much.
Yeah.
Just go deleting files because you feel like a rebel.
But it is actually interesting. Like, it's an interesting exercise if you ever want to, like, try it out.
Just to see what happens, delete a file that you don't care about.
Feel cool. Also,
they
work
pretty well, the photo ones.
I've never used it.
I had to use it on a memory card once, and it worked perfectly. I was really surprised.
Yeah, they work great. You just basically point it at your drive that you want to search on, and it will just like look for all of the stuff marked for deletion. And if it can recover it, it will, and often it can.
Another useful thing is to put files that are important in something like Dropbox, which even after you delete them, Dropbox will store those files for a while, and you can always recover them.
Yeah, they have like a revision history.
Yeah. That's just built right in. So.
And likewise, CrashPlan, which is the backup service I use, keeps files forever.
You should always just back up your computer too. That's
like
the other
if
thing.
You delete a file, it keeps them forever unless you specifically say you don't want it to do that, which is way cool because as long as you have the service, you can get anything anytime. All right, the next question comes from reader Jose, who writes, I know SSDs are fast but small in capacity, and HDDs are slow but have good capacity. Now I found this. There's something called the Seagate Momentous XT 750GB 7200RPM 30MB cache 2.5-inch solid-state hybrid drive.
3,000.
Could you please use your expertise to tell me if it is a good or bad investment? Now, Whitson, you and I were actually arguing briefly about a week ago, 2 weeks ago, about whether or not we needed to do a post about these specific
kinds
of
like
drives.
These, yeah. So there are a few different... First of all, I'll tell you this. If you're going to go SSD, by far the best thing you can do is to get an SSD and an HDD. Separately. Install your OS and programs on the SSD and put all your files, your media, your music, movies, documents on the HDD.
Mm-hmm. So basically, just briefly, we've talked about it a million times before, just a very quick catch up in case you're not on top of all of this. SSDs, they're like RAM. They're just flash memory. It's super fast. They don't spin like regular hard drives do. They read and write really quickly, which makes your computer go
so
much
fast.
More quickly.
Yeah.
HDDs are like traditional spinning hard drives. They have little disks. They spin really fast. They spin at 7200 RPM, and they read and write data, but it's just less fast. The problem is SSDs are very expensive compared to HDDs per gigabyte. Mm-hmm. So this specific thing is a drive that's some sort of bizarre Frankenstein.
So what this is, yes, it's exactly what it is. It's a hard drive. It's like a laptop hard drive from Seagate that just also happens to have a little 8 gig or 4 gig, depending on which size you get, a little 8 gig SSD inside it. Just a little bit of 8 gig flash memory. What it does is it caches files as you use your computer. It monitors which files you're using the most and caches those on the SSD. So you get a lot of the speed performance boost of an SSD without having to pay for an SSD or use two drives. So like I said, the best thing you can do is have two separate drives. But in a laptop, that isn't always possible. There are little bays where you can take out your CD drive and put in a second hard drive, both for Mac and I think for laptop PCs. Those would be my recommendation. But this is no hassle, very easy to do. You just throw it in like a regular drive and it does the rest at a hardware level. So if you don't want to futz with it, but you just want to boost some of the speed of your PC, it even has like a specific section of that SSD portion that is dedicated to making your PC boot faster. You can do that. On a desktop PC, you also have options like RST and SRT, which let you use a regular SSD, like a 60GB SSD as a cache. That's going to be a little bit better than these hybrid drives, but still not as good as just installing your OS on the SSD.
So how this actually sounds really similar to Windows introduced in Vista that... What was it called?
Ready Boost.
Ready Boost.
Ready Boost. Yeah, this sounds a lot like Ready Boost, but
Ready Boost was RAM, though. Ready Boost was you put it on a thumb drive and it turns it into RAM.
Right.
Well,
but that's sort of what this sounds like it does. I mean, it's not exactly the same, but not quite.
It's the same kind of idea, only just faster.
Yeah. And it's taking like a tiny bit of...
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just interesting. Okay.
I found that Ready Boost didn't do a whole lot.
Ready Boost did do a lot. This will... You'll notice a bigger performance boost from this.
So... What's sort of the broader recommendation on this? Like,
is it worth it? Yes, but only if you can't have an SSD and an HDD in your computer,
or you don't want to pay
for that. Yeah,
I mean, if you're happy, like I just use SSD and my laptop.
Right. It is. These are much bigger. These are going to be like 700 gigs.
Yeah. No. I'm saying if someone actually needs the storage requirements.
So if you don't want to pay for like an 80 gig SSD, or you don't have room for two drives in your computer, yes, this is a better option than just a regular hard drive. But I would try to look at some of the other options first and see if you can maybe take out your optical drive and put in a second hard drive, so you can have an SSD and an HDD.
So if money's not the issue,
yeah. If just money's get not an the SSD. Issue or a drive based, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. If you have one.
So
bay.
If you have no, yeah, I would say that this is a good, not last resort, but this would be down on the list of speed boosting tricks that I would try.
If you need the space, but you want the speed.
Yep. But again, yeah.
And, it should be marketing for and Seagate's without the hassle, hybrid
this
drive.
This is literally a plug it in and go. You don't have to move your user folder or reinstall or migrate your OS or any crap like that. It's it uses just like a regular hard drive. So that's the other advantage.
Okay.
Cool. Okay, so our last question comes from a caller from Dayton, Ohio.
Hi, I was wondering, I know the new Mac line is coming out with messengers so you can text from your Mac to your iPhone. Is there a way to do this from the Mac to the Android? Thank you.
Okay, so he's saying Apple has iMessage on the iPhone and iDevices and Messages on Mac OS X,
right.
Which you can get in beta on Lion, and you can and will be in part of OS X Mountain Lion in the summer, I guess.
Yeah.
And he wants
text from your computer.
Text from your computer and also do instant messaging, and he wants to have that functionality with an Android device instead of just Apple products. So yes and no. I mean, because Messages on the Mac is an IM client. It's probably going to replace iChat based on what it looks like. It uses so much of the functionality already that I think there are two options. There's one to use Messages on the Mac and communicate with Android devices through an IM client using something that supports Google Chat, any other Jabber clients, AOL Instant Messenger, anything like that. Alternatively, you can just use Google Voice because that works with every device. And on the Mac, you can use a client called Growl Voice, which we all like. And it lives up in your menu bar and is really, really handy. It drops down. You can just send a text message. You can see all your text messages in there. It doesn't necessarily, it won't sync what you wrote everywhere like Messages does or iMessage does, but it will sync all the stuff that you've received. So you can still reply to everybody.
And you can always go to the Google Voice web app. Oh, that's to see true, all yeah. of your back and forth conversations.
Yeah, that will always be there. I think the downside really to using Google Voice though is that sometimes the messages come in different orders. If you send like more than 160 characters at a time, they come in backwards for me. I sometimes don't get
rarely,
messages
like...
on my iPhone, but I mean, I can get them by going using the Google Voice app, but they won't send to me directly sometimes.
Adam has a horrible history of things not going well for him. That
yeah,
with
Google Voice works great
with
for
Google.
Me. I love it. I use it full time, and it is fantabulous.
I really want to love it, and it could work.
It really
better,
wants
but like,
to love you.
iMessage has worked really well for me with the people I've used it with. I've had no issues once I figured out how to get it to sync properly. But
so the catch with using it's sort of a choice of, you know, what you and your friends, I guess, are going to use most, because I love doing the Google Voice and I use Growl Voice, and you can get Growl notifications when new texts come in. It's all very well integrated.
Yeah.
And a lot of my friends don't have iPhones. So like Messages is still going to be limited to iMessage. So that you're still not going to get that full like text from your computer functionality.
Yeah. You need to, like, if your friends have some dumb phones, then Google Voice is the only thing that'll work, because iMessage can't communicate I mean, it has to be an Apple device.
iMessage seems like it's been set up kind of poorly. I feel like there are a lot of little things they can do to make it incredible.
Once I get it working properly, it's fine. If I send to my phone, I can't get messages that are sent to my phone through iMessage on my computer.
Yeah. Right.
So I have to have people send me an email address.
And that's insane. That drives me crazy.
All it is an IM client. It's so poorly done. And if they did it like Google Voice did it.
Alan's just like, yeah.
Alan, what do you think about all this?
No, I agree with everything you just said. I mean, I use Google Voice too, but it sucks when, you know, trying to use Google Voice cross-platform and everything.
It works, but
it's not as elegant as iMessage is.
Well,
you know what this is?
This is the one thing in your life that works.
It is the one thing in my life.
Because you've broken everything else.
Google Voice has just always been that rock that I can cling to if something else in my technological life breaks.
It's not perfect, but it's good. It does work. So
wow.
Well, sometimes.
So at that high energy point, let's move on to a little show and tell. Yeah.
What is this thing that I have? Oh, it's a, I didn't bring the old surge protector that we love so much. Belkin's had a couple of surge protectors with USB on them, and I wanted to bring it, and I forgot because
it's just a little block with USB.
Yeah, it's a three port. It's basically, for those of you who can see, it's a surge protector with three plugs on it instead of six like this one has. And then two USB ports on the top, so it's a bit smaller than this one. But the problem with it is that when you plug it into the wall, it sticks out from the wall a little bit, and if you try to, it doesn't sit flush with the wall. So when you plug things in, it kind of bends.
It's extremely heavy too. It was a not great.
It was a great idea, but it just didn't.
Oh, Alan's got it right there.
Oh, yeah, Alan,
got it right there.
Our savior.
And it works really well, and it's an awesome thing to carry in your like travel bag, in your book bag, in your laptop bag, whatever. It's great to have on hand. I've used mine for years and loved it. But Belkin just came out with this one, which is kind of an awesome improvement.
Yeah, they didn't design it for travel purposes necessarily, but it gives you six ports. It does take up two outlets, so you know you can look at it however you want. The other one kind of covers up the outlet sometimes, depending on where it is. But you get six ports to plug in, still two USB ports. But what's really nice about it is it's flush with the wall. And if you want to have it there permanently and you don't want to travel, it has a little screw so you can screw it in. And, you know, I mean, we've posted about so many different kinds of wall ports where you can just take the faceplate off and then it turns it into a USB and a plug. But then you lose all these plugs. And this one expands your plugs. You get two USB ports. And it's small enough that you could really take it in your bag.
Yeah, and so this one actually probably is slightly better for just sort of a home upgrade, like a mini home upgrade. The nice thing actually that the one that Alan has, it can cover plugs. However, it has pivot. That little button that you can pivot the outlet plug like all the way around, so you can. It's a little bit more flexible.
A little too flexible, if you ask
me. I was a little bummed when I realized. This is the thing about these. They actually always come. They're always bigger than you think they're going to be.
Like it's not that big, though.
No, it's not. The one Alan has was bigger than I thought when it got there.
This one's skinnier,
I've grown to
though.
Love it. This one is skinnier. It's also, but the I wasn't sort of expecting the two outlet aspect of it when I got it, which sort of bummed me out.
Yeah.
Especially, you actually literally need two outlets because it has this
grounder. Yeah.
Yeah.
One of these days they'll make one where it's just where it's like the. I mean, even if I'm cool with that having three options, and being a small one, it's just that the other one just sticks out, and when you plug things in, it bends, and I feel like stuff's breaking.
And it falls out a lot. It doesn't have a lot of. Anyway, it's a likable little surge protector upgrade.
Yeah, now you have
new
options.
One from Belkin.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
So, let's download some stuff.
are we downloading first?
Well,
Alan?
Yep. So we won't download anything because it's a web app.
Right.
Although I guess WonderKit is a really cool kind of. I use it as a bank for my ideas. It's actually a to-do app. It's primarily web app. They have an iPhone version and a Mac OS version or OS X version. They say is line only, but it works everywhere. But in addition to just keeping your to-dos, it's a little bit different than most to-do apps because it doesn't do the whole, like, I'm going to remind you, I'm going to pop up these alerts and all this other stuff every time, you know, something, you have to do something right now. But it makes it really easy to get your ideas into the to-do app or into this app and then walk away and go do something else. Like, you know, I have to go do this at 4 p.m. This is the kind of app that you look at and you say, okay, I had an idea to do this thing, or I'm going to renovate my house and these are all the little things that I need to do or need to remember in order to get that done.
And Alan,
the other cool thing about it,
you just did a feature all about sort of how you use it for that, right?
Yeah, I mean, I use it mostly to track my ideas for like my personal projects, and it has different categories. So you can say, you know, my work ideas go here, and then my personal ideas go here, and you can keep them separate. It's really cool that way. It has a social feature. You can invite other people in to look at those ideas and comment on them. You can assign them things. I don't use that social feature so much, but I can see how it would be useful for people who collaborate on the same.
Cool. Okay, Whitson, while we're on the web, you fixed YouTube last week.
I didn't fix YouTube. I didn't fix YouTube, but a lot of developers out there did. So I found a very cool Chrome extension, a very cool user script for Firefox and everyone else. I've been using YouTube a lot more lately, and YouTube is just one of those things that we kind of all use every day, but we don't think of tweaking it like we think of tweaking Gmail and other web apps. But it has so many just little things that drive me crazy. Like, I can't choose what resolution I want videos to display in. Like, I just want all videos to play in 720p.
I want videos to not autoplay. I'm glad you wrote this just
so
because
here's this
no
too.
More autoplay.
Also, YouTube always starts playing a video as soon as you visit the page, and I don't want that. I want to click on it to start playing it, because if I open like up a bunch of videos and tabs that I'm going to watch in sequence, it starts playing them all at once, and it's really annoying. It also does things like, you know, you can turn off the comments, because YouTube comments are the scum of the entire internet.
You know,
except for you guys commenting on this video.
No,
you're awesome.
But seriously, they've been really good. I've been surprised.
Actually, yeah, I have been shocked at.
We've had a couple of inappropriate things, but for the most part,
they're all Lifehacker readers really and good. not YouTube trolls.
Yeah.
So
but anyway,
thank you.
Yes, thank you. We love you guys. It just fixes all these things that kind of make YouTube a pain in the butt to use. The Chrome extension in particular is fantastic, because if you remove comments, you can do things like automatically expand the description of the video, so it uses up that space really nicely. And mm-hmm. You can change the size of the video, so not only is it 720p, but it's also like a little bit bigger in the window without full screening. You just have a bigger video.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, go check that out. Number of different downloads depending on your platform and preferences. It's awesome.
Cool. Okay, Alan, Flywrites, tell us about it.
Yeah, so if you've ever been through kind of TSA hell, then you know it can kind of be a real pain. But most people will yell and scream at whatever agent they have to deal with. But at the end of the day, they don't really do anything. So Flywrites is an application that allows you to report harassment by airport security officials as soon as it happens. That way you can put in, you know, what you felt like you were being profiled for, whether it's, you know, race or religion or ethnicity, anything like that, gender, whatever. And then you put in the airport you were at, the flight you were trying to catch, and then it'll send that report directly to the TSA and the Department of Homeland Security on your behalf. So that way you just go ahead and do it while you're angry and get it out of the way. But the other half of the app, which is also just as important as being able to submit your complaint, is that it also has all the TSA's rules and regulations listed. So before you get really angry about something that happened, you can actually read up and make sure that you go to the airport in the right frame of mind before something happens.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, and one thing I'd like to add to this Another point of recourse that you have if you're having trouble, not necessarily with the TSA, but in general at an airport, there's an organization called Flyers Rights at flyersrights.org where you can call a hotline. I don't have the number on hand, but...
It'll be on your screen.
There it is. You can call them up, and they can be very helpful in case of an actual emergency where if you had like your medication taken away or you're not going to be able to get on the flight, and you should be. So definitely worth checking out just so you have on hand in case it's not just a simple complaint.
Cool. Okay, ShareMouse. So there is an application that I've used a lot for Windows, Mac, Linux called
Synergy.
And basically the idea is this. You've got your laptop, for example, and then you've got, say, a desktop. They're running two different operating systems, but you're sitting them side by side on your desk. And you want to be able to just sort of control them both with, say, the same keyboard and mouse. So a lot of times the way that Synergy works, there's another thing for Mac only called Teleport that's actually really good.
And another thing for Windows called Mouse Without Borders.
And so basically it's like you set your two screens side by side, and I take my mouse from one side of... all the way to the edge of one screen, and then it just sort of like magically teleports the mouse and my keyboard to controlling the other computer.
It's like your other computer is another monitor, but it's exactly. Actually another computer, and it's amazing and magical to be able to use the same keyboard.
What's so
and
great
mouse.
About ShareMouse?
So ShareMouse is a new
ShareMouse is a new one, and the main difference is that unlike Synergy, which in the past Synergy was kind of difficult to set up, it's a little bit easier recently. But it's still, you have to download a server app for one computer and the client app for another computer, and you have to set up your monitors. ShareMouse,
But if you want to, we have guides on how to set up.
We have guides on how to do that.
And it is good because it's Windows, Mac, Linux, if you want to cover the entire gamut.
And it's a great app, and we still stand by our love for it. The nice thing about ShareMouse is that while it's still Windows and Mac, which is great, but it takes literally no setup to get working. You download the app, install it on each computer, the same app, no like client-server differentiation. Download the app, and you can start using your mouse and keyboard on both computers. It's so fast and easy to use. The downside of ShareMouse is that it is not free for everybody. It is only free if you are using two computers, as opposed to three or four.
It works for me.
Yep, if it's only free if you are using less than two monitors, I think, per computer. So I don't think...
Still good.
I know, right? And it's because it's supposed to be paid for professional use,
right,
or for power users. So it's trying to detect whether you are a power user or professional user.
Mm.
And it detects whether you are a professional user by seeing if you are using professional-grade apps like Photoshop.
Oh, weird.
And things like that.
That's really weird.
Yes,
it was a little invasive, too.
Yeah.
Everyone says that, but that's... I mean, I don't think that's that weird.
It's kind of bizarre.
But it's not... It is weird.
It's just the first app that's actually enforced the this-is-not-free-professional environment.
No,
yeah.
But it is weird. What's weird about it is that it's basically a rootkit. It's like paying attention to everything else. Like, when I install something, I want it to, like... It's its own thing. I don't want it to spy on what I'm doing.
A lot of apps work that way.
I would rather they just make me pay for it than
the price isn't great. The price is pretty absurd at $25 per machine you plan to use with it. So if I have two computers, you get to pay $50, which is ridiculous and hell no.
Anyway, I'm sure there's workarounds if you're desperately trying to not pay for it.
But if you're that desperate you're going to work around it, just use Synergy.
Yeah.
The thing that's nice about this is if you only have two computers and you just want to use your mouse and keyboard with them and you're not for most people, this is super easy to set up and you should use it. But if you fall into that other category, don't worry about it and just use Synergy.
Yeah. Other cool features of it include clipboard sharing. You can drag files from one computer to
the other. That's
the
other thing. Unfortunately, Synergy does not have this, but you can drag files from one computer over to the other one, which is awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. But of course, you can just use Dropbox.
All right. So quickly, last download, Sonora.
Sonora is my new favorite music player for OS X.
Mine too. I am so glad that you posted it.
So iTunes is fine on OS X. I like it.
Yeah.
It doesn't, there are just some things that it doesn't do that I wish it did. It doesn't have like queue-based listening. So if you're a Winamp user from the old days or you like something like FUBAR where you can just drag songs into a queue and then just kind of start listening, iTunes doesn't have that.
There's also a lot of stuff it has that I wish it didn't do. A lot.
Yeah.
A real lot of stuff.
Yeah, some people just don't like iTunes. Sonora is a very cool music app for OS X that adds a few new features and is just beautiful to look at. It puts your album artwork front and center, huge album art display, so you can scan through your music by album, going through the album art, or by artist on the side. Mm. You can also hit a hotkey and just start typing in the name of an artist and start playing it that way.
You just type.
You just start typing the name of an artist or song or album.
Instant search.
Start playing. It's awesome.
I don't know what you'd ever need out of a music player.
You can queue up songs in the menu bar at the top just from the interface. You can scrabble with Last.fm.
Oh.
It supports file types that iTunes doesn't, like FLAC and OGG.
Mm.
It is my new favorite player for OS X. But if you don't like it, I'd also check out InQ, which is a similar kind of in between iTunes and Sonora.
Yeah, but give Sonora a chance though, because it is a little weird at first.
But there's a 14-day free trial.
The instant search as you type,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to iTunes's default search keyboard shortcut, Command Option F, everyone's favorite, most convenient shortcut. Sonora, it's beautiful. It looks really cool.
It's so great.
14-day free trial. At least try it out.
Sync to your iPod, but it syncs with iTunes, so you don't need to add music to Sonora. You just add music to iTunes, and it'll keep your library the same. Then you can sync your iPod with iTunes and whatnot.
Cool. All right. Well, that is it for this week. Alan, thank you for joining us.
Absolutely.
And for Alan and Whitson and Adam, I'm Adam Pash, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.
If you'd like to ask us a question, send us an email at tips+asklhshow@lifehacker.com. Alternatively, leave us a message at 347-687-8109. Try to keep your questions to about 30 seconds so we can keep the show moving. And thanks for watching, listening, or however you're getting this podcast from the internet to your brain.
Little clever tips for fixing all of YouTube's
you got Smeagol there for a moment.
YouTube's is.